This morning and the previous morning, I described what happens when your meditation goes well. When you have nice nimittas and jhanas, and you can use that for gaining powerful insights. But this evening I was wanting to talk about what you do when your meditation goes wrong, when it doesn't work. Because some of you have had wonderful meditations, some of you not so good meditations. And as well as encouraging those who have the brilliant meditations, it's also good to give advice on what to do when the meditation doesn't work. First of all, to remember, just as in one sutta, I think it's in the Kanda Sanyutta, where the Buddha went to visit one monk who was very sick. And he asked the monk, "How are you going?" And the monk said, "Terrible." Because he was sick, he didn't mind the sickness, but he couldn't get his deep meditation, he couldn't get peaceful. And the Buddha admonished him in a way to say, well, you can't always get good meditation, it's not up to you, it's up to all the causes and conditions. So just contemplate the five khandhas, that's all one needs to do. And it told me that even then, it wasn't a case that the meditation doesn't work because of your fault. Please don't take it personally. The meditation won't always work. You won't get jhana every time. And many of you, I've been telling the story. I always adapt my stories. I change them to make them a little bit more interesting every time. About the man from the up country in Sri Lanka who got a job in Colombo on a building site. And he went to work on Monday and he worked very hard. But then he went home with no pay. He went on Tuesday and Wednesday as well and worked very hard and still he wasn't paid. On Thursday he didn't want to go to work, but his wife forced him. He went there on Thursday, still didn't get paid. On Friday he wanted to give up. He had nothing else to do, so he went to work anyway. And on Friday his boss gave him a big amount of money. And when he went home he told his wife, "From now on I'm only going to go to work on Fridays." Now, of course, a silly person thinks that you only go to work the day you get paid. But a wise person knows that you get paid for all the other days you went to work, when you went home with nothing. So when you get a good meditation, it's like payday. And it depends not just on the meditation you did on that session, but depends on all the other meditations you did when you didn't get nimitta or jhana. That's where you do the work. And when it happens, you get beautiful meditations, that's when you get payday. But every day cannot be payday. And that was emphasized by my first meditation teacher, who once told me there's no such thing as a bad meditation. And I argued with him. He said, "You don't know how I meditate." That was in the early days. He said, no. It's when you are meditating, even though you're making a few mistakes and you don't get very still, you may be trying, you may be watching the wrong thing in the wrong way, but nevertheless your mind is inclining towards meditation. You're still making some good causes for future success. So he said, the meditations where you don't get results, don't put them aside as bad meditations. You're learning a lot. You're inclining the mind. And it's better to sit than actually to do nothing at all and just go off and work or talk or indulge yourself. It's still worthwhile. But if that happens all the time, if you go to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the next week, and the next week, and the next week, and you don't get a paycheck, you don't get any pay, then there is a problem. So what to do when the meditation seems to be going wrong? First of all, it's something which I mentioned in Narada Center, that there are two types of meditation. Now don't think he means samatha and vipassana. You know that I don't like that distinction at all. Even my teacher, Ajahn Chah, the way he would answer that question, is there a difference between Samatha and Vipassana? He would hold up his hand. He said, now you can see the front of my hand. But he said, I promise, I guarantee, the back of my hand is right behind. Even though you can't see it, the back of my hand is there. Now, he said, you can see the back of my hand, but the front of my hand is there. Just you can't see it. He said, just like Samatha and Vipassana, the front and the back of a hand. Sometimes you think you're doing Samatha. You can only see Samatha. But Vipassana is right behind. Now you're doing Vipassana, but Samatha is right behind. Ajahn Chah used to say they were indistinguishable. They always go together. One might lead, but the other one is very, very close behind. Now that's Samatha Vipassana as a pair. You can sort of see both. But when I say the two types of meditation, oh, please come in, there's a couple of monks. Find a seat somewhere. There's always a seat somewhere. If you wish, you can sit up here, but you may need to give a talk. So the two types of meditation, the way I describe it, are called Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. I invoke a basic teaching of Buddhism to describe two different types of meditation. So what do I mean by Second Noble Truth Meditation? You all know Second Noble Truth is craving causes suffering. So the cause of suffering is craving. So Second Noble Truth Meditation is when you're suffering, suffering, suffering. When you're having no peace, no happiness, just suffering, suffering, suffering. So what is the cause of that? Is it because you're doing the meditation wrong, or you're not good enough, or the teaching's wrong? What is the cause of bad meditation? Second Noble Truth, you've been craving. You've been wanting something. So whenever the meditation does not work, when it is suffering, when you're frustrated, when you know you've got no peace, your crazy mind, it must mean you've been doing Second Noble Truth meditation, craving. So when there is a problem in the meditation, don't go forcing, forcing. It's not because you haven't exercised enough willpower. It's because you've exercised too much willpower. You've been craving too much. So whenever the meditation goes wrong, it doesn't work, check. What did I want? What was I desiring? And then you'll find the cause of suffering, the cause of your wrong meditation. So instead, please do not do Second Noble Truth Meditation. Please do Third Noble Truth Meditation. And what is the Third Noble Truth? Letting go of craving leads to the freedom from suffering, to nirvana, the paramang sukhang, the highest happiness. So if your meditation is getting happy and peaceful and closer to nirvana, well done. You have been doing Third Noble Truth Meditation, letting go of wanting. So check when your meditation works and whether it's peaceful, or you know that this was a very nice meditation. It means you've let go of suffering. You've done some let go of craving. So this is the first thing I ask people to do. When the meditation's not working, when you have suffering, pain, frustration, ask yourself, what did I want? In fact, sometimes years ago I used to do that at stages of meditation when things weren't working. Maybe you got to full awareness of the breath, but it wasn't delightful. And I got frustrated. I couldn't make that going inwards to the next stage. So I'd stop and ask myself, what do I want? And I would see I wanted something. Usually I wanted the next stage. I wanted to get into jhana quickly. Come on, I haven't got much time today. Whatever it was, I was wanting something. And once I identified what I wanted, I realized how stupid I was. I let go of that want, and the problem was solved. Because at that stage, I was doing Second Noble Truth meditation. I wanted, and that gave me the suffering which stopped me going deeper. So, any problem you have in meditation, it's always because you want something. Let go of wanting, and then it's only a matter of time before you go deeper and deeper and deeper into stillness. If you want that to happen quickly, of course it doesn't work. Because it's again, Second Noble Truth meditation. You have to be so patient, waiting in this moment, not waiting for something to happen that is also wanting and creates suffering. But sometimes it happens in meditation that the mind really goes crazy. Now this happens because you've been having a problem in meditation. You're wanting something, usually something tiny, and you get frustrated. And what most people do when they're frustrated is try even harder. There's a saying in the West, a very stupid saying, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. That's stupid. You just get into more problems and trouble. Instead, in Buddhism we say, when the going gets tough, the wise let it be. They don't get going, they don't spoil it, they just let it be. And then there's no tough going. If you're not going anywhere, where's the toughness? So, instead of fighting, what most people do, when they get into a little bit of trouble, they try even harder. And when they try even harder, they get more suffering, so they try even harder. And they get even more suffering, and they try even harder until they get crazy. Because it does not work. Please don't try and solve the problems in meditation with more effort, with more struggle. You're already in deep trouble. Don't go deeper. Instead, you should try what I've called the Nandi Visala, no, not the Nandi Visala, Nalagiri. The Nalagiri strategy in meditation. Every one of you will know, especially the lay people from the time you were in Dharma school as kids, Nalagiri was the name of this elephant, which Devadatta's friends gave alcohol to, toddy to make the elephant drunk, and he let the elephant loose in the narrow streets of Rajagaha when the Buddha was coming on arms round with his disciples. And so this elephant was charging down the road, smashing everything, trampling on people, smashing down trees. He was a big, intoxicated, mad tusker. And people were running in fear. They were climbing up the trees. They were jumping over the walls. And when they saw the Buddha and his monks walking mindfully on arms round, they said, "Get out of the way! A mad elephant is coming! He's going to trample on everything!" And many of those mindful monks climbed up the trees, jumped over the walls. That's what they did. Except for two. The Buddha and his faithful attendant, Ananda. They stayed to face the elephant. And what did Ananda do? He stood in front of his beloved master. "Let the elephant kill me. I will protect my beloved master, the Buddha." And that was a wonderful act of metta and sacrifice. And I asked my disciples in Perth, "Would you do that to me?" They say, "No." So there was Ananda standing in front of the Buddha with his mad elephant charging in their direction. Remember, those streets in those days were very narrow. You couldn't get out of the elephant's way. So what the Buddha did, he very kindly and gently pushed Ananda out of the way. "It's a wonderful act of self-sacrifice, Ananda, but look, I can handle this." So I'm sure that Ananda was quite disappointed. But nevertheless, it meant that there was this elephant charging towards the Lord Buddha, just the two of them. And what would happen next? Now remember, the Lord Buddha had immense Patihariya, had powerful iddhis. He had such strong psychic powers. If he wanted to, he could have grabbed the trunk of the elephant, twirled him 3 times around his head, and thrown him over the Ganges about 200 kilometers away. That would be as easy as just scratching his ear because of the Buddha's powerful iddhis. But did the Buddha do that? Of course not. He did not use force or willpower. Instead, as you all know from your Dharma school as kids, he used metta. This powerful loving kindness. And the way I describe it, he was saying, Nalagiri, the door of my heart is open to you, no matter what you ever do to me. You may pick me up with your trunk and smash me to death against the wall, but I will always love and care for you. You may trample me with your big feet into hamburger patty, but I will never criticize or give you any ill will. I just give you unconditional loving kindness. Whatever you do to me, just do it. I love you. And with that powerful, unconditional, immense metta, as you all know, that mad, crazy, angry elephant stopped in front of the Buddha and bowed down his head so the Buddha could stroke his trunk. There, Nalagiri. It's all right, Nalagiri. There, Nalagiri. You all know that that was the story. Maybe I added a few bits and pieces here and there. Of how the Buddha subdued the mad, crazy, intoxicated elephant. And that's how I teach my students to subdue their mad, crazy, intoxicated mind. Because that's what it feels like sometimes. You get into these states where the mind is all over the place. And it's crazy, it's mad, it's destroying everything. And what do many people do? They try and use force to subdue that mind. You'll never succeed. And that's not the Buddhist way. Instead, use loving kindness. Stupid mind. Restless, angry, crazy. The door of my heart is open to you, crazy mind. You can do whatever you like to me. And I will always be your friend. If you do that to your crazy defilements, in a few moments, your mind will be bowing before you as you stroke it. There, crazy mind. It's all right, crazy mind. There, crazy mind. All your restlessness, ill will, frustration, disappointment, everything will vanish and you'll find incredible peace. Now, do you understand why people have huge attacks of defilements, a crazy mind? Because they have ill will, not metta. It's not ill will towards a person, or maybe it is ill will towards yourself for being stupid, but a lot of time it's ill will towards your crazy mind. So much so that you want to control, subdue your mind by force. And that doesn't work, that just feeds the crazy mind. The other story which I invoke was a story from the Udana, which I put in that book, The Opening the Door of Your Heart, published by the BPS. And in that story, it was from the Udana, where, and again, I do change these stories, and I don't think you would mind, because I just, the heart of the story is there, I just elaborate it to make a decent point. And that was the story of the demon who came into the emperor's palace. Now, this particular story, there was an emperor who lived in a wonderful palace, but one day he was out on some business. And when he was absent, this monster, this terrible demon, came into that palace, and he was so terrifying and frightening that all the soldiers and guards who were supposed to protect the palace froze in fear, allowing this monster to go right into the center part of the palace, into the main hall, and sit on the emperor's throne. And at that, all the guards and soldiers, even the ministers, said, "That goes too far. Get out of here. Who do you think you are? You can't sit in our emperor's throne." And at that, that monster grew a couple of inches bigger, more terrifying. And the smell, because you know that bad monsters, they get a terrible smell. The smell got worse. And the language of this monster got even worse too. And that made them very upset. They got out their swords. They clenched their fists. They made angry threats. But at every angry word, deed, or thought, the demon grew an inch bigger, more ugly, more smelly, and the language got worse. Now this had been going on for quite some time. When the emperor came back, and the emperor saw this huge monster in his hall, and he was so frightening, so terrifying, that even good forest monks would run in fear. And the smell, the stench coming off this monster, made maggots vomit and become sick. Now you know that maggots, they live in dirty stuff like feces and pussy wounds. Even they couldn't stand the smell. And the language of this monster was worse than you'll see outside some of these wine shops in Sri Lanka if India beat Sri Lanka at the cricket. It was terrible language. But the reason the emperor was the boss was because he was wise. He looked at the situation, he knew straight away what to do. He said to the demon, "Welcome. Thank you for coming to visit me. Has anyone given you any gilampas yet? Would you like a cup of tea or some fruit juice?" And of those few kind words, that monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, and the language got better. And all the soldiers and guards and ministers in that palace, they realized what their mistake was. Instead of getting angry at that demon and saying, "Get out," they too welcomed him. And they went and asked him if he wanted some tea. "You know, we've got some very good Sri Lankan tea. We've also got some green tea. Would you like some milk, some sugar? Would you like some ginger or anything else with it? Or would you like some proper food? You're not a monk. Would you like some rice and curry? Would you like some Western food, a pizza?" Because they've got monster-sized pizzas, especially for monsters. And they were so kind to this demon, this monster, that every kind act, word, or thought, the monster grew an inch smaller. And soon the monster was back to the size when he first came in the palace. But they never stopped. They were so kind to that monster that soon he got so small that one more kind act and the monster vanished. Now the Buddha told that story, but not exactly as I said. But he called that anger-eating monster. A demon, a monster who feeds on ill will. The more you say, "Get out of here, you don't belong," the bigger, uglier, smellier, and worse it gets. And he said, there are many anger-eating demons in the world. If you feed them anger, it gets worse. If you feed them acceptance, loving-kindness, and every act of loving-kindness and metri gets an inch smaller, an inch smaller, an inch smaller, an inch smaller, so it totally vanishes. And that's a very beautiful and effective way of dealing with some of your hindrances, especially if your meditation is all over the place. Because even your mind is like anger-eating demon, or the problem is like anger-eating demon. You give it anger, restlessness, get out of here. Sloth and torpor, I don't want you, get out. And your sloth and torpor gets bigger, uglier, and more of a problem. Which is why I invite you, if nothing else works, to use that anger-eating demon simile. I'm restless. I haven't had any meditation success at all. Welcome, stupid mind. The door of my heart's open to you. What do you want? What do you want to think about? Please, off you go, think about it. And when you don't give it anger, the problem gets a little bit less every time. Give it metta, loving kindness. Because loving kindness is another way of saying, let it be, or let go. The Buddha described it like a mother loves her only child. Maybe you've been monks very many years. You haven't seen how mothers look after their children. Not only carrying them around in their tummy for such a long time and giving birth painfully, but even worse than that, I've been on these aircraft, traveling from place to place, and throughout the whole flight, that poor baby screaming. And the mother, if that was me, I'd be, even though I was a monk, I was tempted to put it in the toilet, lock the door, and go away. I don't know how they stand that. But they do. And it's amazing to see a mother's love for her little monster. And I looked at that and I thought, my goodness, if a mother can be at peace with such a demanding baby, I can be at peace with such a demanding mind. Because sometimes in early meditation, my mind was like that, screaming to itself because it wasn't getting what it wanted. You know, you want to get your nice meditation like you had last time, and it doesn't work. Not fair. But what does a mother do? Tolerates it with lovely, loving kindness. And when you do that, the baby actually tends to calm down, just like your mind will calm down when you give it maitri. So that's a wonderful strategy, that when your meditation doesn't seem to be working, instead of fighting harder and struggling, try that Nalagiri strategy. Try maitri. So it's okay, mind. Not every meditation will be successful, but at least I'm creating the causes for success in the future. Fighting just feeds the problem. Love is another form of letting things be, accepting them, understanding that all these states of meditation are not under your control, they're causes and conditions. So all we can ever do is put the causes and conditions into place right now, knowing that in the future something good will happen. I've called this making wholesome meditation karma. So causes and effect. You make wholesome meditation karma now, and you know you'll get vipaka in the future. When that vipaka ripens, the results of good karma, we don't know. But we know that's all we can do. Make good meditation karma now. And what do I mean by good meditation karma? The Buddha said that karma is intentional. Intention is karma. Chetanaham karmam vadami, said the Buddha. So, right intention is wholesome karma. And of course, what is right intention? Sama sankapa. I'm using sankapa instead of chetana now. Sama sankapa, the right intention of the second factor of the Eightfold Path. There are three sama sankapas. Nekama sankapa, avayapada sankapa, and vihingsaka sankapa. Sometimes I call it ahingsaka sankapa. What do those mean? This is the right intention, the core of making wholesome meditation karma which leads to good results. So this should be the way you have intention with whatever you experience. Nekama, renunciation, letting go. Letting go of controlling and will and owning things. So the first thought should be letting go. So no matter what state of mind you're in, you can always practice Nekama, letting go. The second right intention, Avayapada, which you all know is the same as Metta or Maitri, loving kindness. So you don't have thoughts of ill will towards your state of mind, but thoughts of loving kindness. And even though your mind is in a crazy state, it doesn't matter. Like a mother can love her child when it's screaming, you can love your mind when it's screaming. So you practice the wholesome karma of having loving kindness to your mind right now. And the last, vihingsaka or ahingsaka. In the West, that's a very easily understood word by everybody because of the work of Mahatma Gandhi, whose ahimsa policy towards the British Raj in India got rid of the British, not through force, but through non-violence. That non-violence, that gentleness, is the third Samma Sankappa. So by making good, wholesome meditation karma, whatever we're experiencing right now, we have intentions of letting go, kindness and gentleness. Let go, be kind, be gentle. Let go, be kind, be gentle. Let go, be kind, be gentle. And you can do that with anything. With any state of mind. Crazy, sick, in bed with some cancer or with some very bad ailment, you can always let go, renounce. You can always be kind, like you're kind to Nalagiri. You can always be gentle, which means you can always make wholesome meditation karma. And that means sometime in the future, who knows when, but usually pretty soon, you will reap the results. Peace, stillness, jhanas, insight, and vimutti, freedom. That's the best you can do. I mean the very best. What is better than the second factor of the Eightfold Path? Right intention. Which is why I keep on encouraging people. Just renounce, let go. Over in the West, I say, make peace. Be kind, be gentle. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. And people over where I live know that by heart I've totally brainwashed them. We've even printed t-shirts and they've got that on the back. Make peace, be kind, be gentle, signed Ajahn Brahm. So when you're meditating, you look at the person in front of you and you've got the Dharma right in front and the t-shirt. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. And that really works. So you've got a crazy mind. So you've got sloth and torpor. So you're really being out of your head with all sorts of craziness. You can always make peace. You can always be kind. You can always be gentle. Which means you can always meditate. You can always create good, wholesome meditation karma with whatever mind state you happen to be in. Because just like in a Sanyutta Nikaya, sometimes you are sick and you haven't got the conditions, the causes and conditions to get into deep meditation. It's not your fault. You just can't control these things. As it said, I mentioned this to someone in interviews in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the second sutta of the Buddha, that teaching which created the first arahats after the Buddha. Powerful, powerful teaching. This is one of my favorite suttas. Because it says in there, each of the five khandhas, they say, you might try and wish, oh, may my consciousness be like this and be like that. But that cannot be done. Because the consciousness is not yours. If it was yours, you could say, oh, may my consciousness be free of pain, may I only be happy. You can't do that. It just shows you have to let go. You've got no choice. My sankharas, my sanya, my vedana, my rupa. Oh, may my body be like this. May it not be like that. That can't be done. Nalabhati. Labheta. That's because it was a conditional case. It cannot be done. It's not obtained simply because these things don't belong to you. They're anatta. And when I read that and read that and read that and really got it into my head, I realized, look, you can't control things. You can't always say, I'm going to get jhana today. All you can do is create the conditions as best you possibly can. And then, once you've created the conditions, you've done your best. Jhana comes, jhana doesn't come. It's according to other conditions, not yours. But you have done your very best by creating the good conditions. And for me, the good conditions are always with Sammasankhapa. I make peace with whatever I have to do. You know, sometimes I look at myself and say, why do I always have to teach? Why do I always have to talk to people about the same old problems? Why do I always have to... You know, sometimes I'm in a difficult situation, I'm too well known. I was teaching a retreat in Malacca, in Malaysia. And when I finished, someone offered me to drive me from Malacca to the airport. It's about 2 hours' drive in Malaysia. But of course, they offered to drive me there because they could have me in the car by themselves to ask all the questions about meditation, Buddhism and everything else. So they never let up for the whole journey. So finally I got to the airport. Finally I got, you know, into the aircraft and sat down and thought, now I could relax until I get back to Perth. But as I was sitting down on a window seat with a gentleman next to me, a woman came down the aisle, looked at me and said, are you Ajahn Brahm? I thought, oh no, I've had it. I said, yes, you can't lie. Oh, wonderful, I want to ask you some questions. And I thought, I'm safe, there's a man in the seat next to me. So, you know, he was sitting a long way away. But she was smart. She said to the man, would you mind exchanging seats? And he agreed. So she was sitting next to me and I could not escape. I was stuck in that. So she had all counselling about her problems until the flight was landed. So I just can't, I can't escape. So what do I do when you're tired? You don't want to sort of have more counselling about problems. It's mostly marriage problems that they ask you in such cases. And look, why do you ask a monk? I've never been married. But still they ask you. So when that happened, I thought, oh no, now come on. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. I can't escape. You're sick, you can't escape. It's the nature of life. So stop getting angry at it. Stop treating it like a demon getting angry because it gets worse, 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 worse. Let it be. Be kind, be gentle. That's the best you can possibly do. And sooner or later, she leaves. And you're free. Sooner or later, your stupid mind disappears. And you're at peace. So that's the way to deal with crazy situations in the mind. Or sickness. Don't fight it. That's not ahimsaka. That's being aggressive. Don't hate those crazy mind states. That's going against the second factor of having kindness. And don't try and control it. That's going against nekama. Renounce it. That's why you are renunciant. You've renounced so many ways you can control. You can't control your food. You have got no money to control your life. As a bhikkhu, basically other people look after you and feed you. You've got very little freedom to control your lives. And that gives you amazing, a different type of freedom. So that's how we deal with the situations in life, especially on this meditation retreat at this time. 5 days gone, only a couple of days to go. I'm not getting anywhere. Ah, help! Just let go. Be kind, be gentle. And then you are doing the maximum, the best you possibly can do. You're making the best wholesome meditation karma. Trust in the law of karma, cause and effect, it does work. You'll get great vipaka. Because you created the causes. So that's using some of the Buddha's teachings and understanding how to deal with the times when the meditation doesn't go as well as you expect. What to do then, and now you know. So that's the talk for this evening.